Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to yet another episode of Contact Lost, the best Polish English speaking podcast out there, a podcast about competitive Warhammer 40K. I'm your usual host, Tomek, also known as Tweak. And today with me, I have a very special guest to talk about a very special topic. We are moving away a little bit from like the games exactly, so analyzing games and so on, analyzing the meta. Today, we are focusing about something else. And since this is not live, you have already seen the banner that says manners at the table and so on. This is exactly what we are going to focus on today. So we are talking about minding your manners at the table, knowing how to behave, knowing how to be a good sport and how to show good sportsmanship at the table. And I couldn't think of anyone better to come and join me to do this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I have probably the nicest voice on the internet out there. And I must say that it means something when I say a nice voice, because recently my new hobby has, well, it has become my new hobby. I listen to audiobooks in English, and I'm listening to Stephen Fry read Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
nice. That's
an
good
orgasm to your ears. It's a feast to your ears. And this gentleman over here is the second after Stephen Fry, so I hope that you enjoy him as well. He is... I don't know, are you the mastermind behind 6++ gaming or like founder? I actually should have asked before.
It's a good question. I think I would say I'm sort of the mouth of Sauron character. I'm the one they would send out at the Black Gate, right, to get my head cut off. I'm kind of I'm the one that talks too much and does the kind of face work. So 6++, hi everybody, it's Tom of 6++ here. And
I should have
no, don't you worry, it's good questions, it's good questions though, right? I like it, it's organic. I think with our team is a 40k team which has been set up for a few years by Chris Tull and Lee Jones, were the original founders, right? So Chris Tull's our captain, I'm vice captain, and we do various you know, podcasts, YouTube, all that stuff, bat reps, and we've got a regular live show, that 6++ show that goes out on Tuesdays. And so I do the sort of voice aspect of that and the talking and the hosting for that. So that's kind of where I kind of fit into things. But Chris is captain. We've got a whole bunch of other people. Davey, John Scrivens does all of our graphics and art these days. We've also got who else comes on the show very regularly? We have Jack Chapman comes on the show. Ed Fawcett is the sort of the sort of the dark side, the evil figure on our show. He brings the kind of the more bolshy sort of assertive side to my sort of soft boy antics. So we've got a whole bunch of people, and we're quite a big team now in the UK. We play very regularly, and so increasingly kind of, I guess, involved with the scene over there.
Yeah, I must admit that I have become a regular listener. I was on the podcast once as well.
You were for our Halloween special.
Exactly.
The spookiness tier list. Hell yeah.
But I'm in love with the podcast. I'm in love with what you do. I'm in love with all the personalities that you mentioned. Davey is doing the covering Tyranids, which I play and adore and so on. But also, it's just probably the best, most organic and natural banter out there. And I just cannot recommend your podcast enough, or everything that you do.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, especially to our Polish listeners who might not know who you are. Well, I hope that after today they will know. But you guys are even venturing into like the WTC stuff, because I know Scrivo is doing some episodes about the WTC.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. To the Polish listener who is fixated about the WTC, I think that's exactly the kind of content that we are looking for as Polish players. So to all our listeners, when we have our downtimes, when we don't release episodes, make sure that you head on and listen to those guys, because
that's very, very kind.
It's so much fun. It's
fun. Is the word. That's the goal, right? And I think that's what we're sort of competitive players. We do get involved. We do all right. And I think we're developing all the time, but mostly we just enjoy having a lot of fun with the game and with the show and with our content. That's very much the goal. So if you go on the show or listen to the show, it's silly jokes. It's silly games. We never take it too seriously. Everyone gets rinsed by everybody else. It's just a lot of friends having a good time. And that's our goal. And that's going to take us onto our topic in a little while as well. But that's something that we think is very fundamental to why we do this in the first place. And we don't want to lose sight of that, right?
Absolutely. But you're a competitive player, like a competitive team.
Don't get me wrong. We compete.
So is the plan for you, for the guys, to participate in the ITT that is coming up?
100%. Yep. So we're actually taking three teams. We've got three teams. We have Alpharius, Omegon, and Legion. We sorted our fives for that, and we're just starting to prep. So actually I'm running Thousand Suns at Nottingham, and it's primarily teams research, because that might be our fifth. It's quite easy to lock down those first three or four. Mm-hmm. What the fifth one, I'm like, what am I, we're gonna be thrown under the bus with this time, right? Mm-hmm. If I go and play Necrons or CSM or Eldar, what do I want that's going to give me a chance into all those things? So we're going to see. Let's see how I get on at Nottingham and see if I can cook up something that can do that job. We're taking three awesome teams with some great players. Scrivo, who you mentioned, who does his Scrivo versus the World series, that's the series on our YouTube, which is about WTC, which is something that basically, thanks to you and Contact Lost, we know about. I was not on my radar at all before that, right? I was aware of the WTC. I hadn't really followed it the last couple of years. This year in the summer, I think I really latched onto it with your content and was just like, oh, this is amazing. And sort of opening it up and seeing it from a sort of European perspective was super, super fun. So yeah, Scrivo's doing a series on that. And congrats, by the way, Scrivo, wherever you are, because actually Scrivo took first place at a team's event with some of the Wales and England guys this weekend just gone. So that was awesome to see.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures on Facebook.
He's so chill. It's super cool.
It is.
Scrivo versus the World is a series all about that. And so we're trying to branch into that. And I think we might send people to War Masters this year, and we might try and be around to at least soak up a bit of that and get a bit more familiar with WTC as well. So that's the plan.
Yeah, well, right. That sounds great. So as a competitive player, I guess you have seen a lot, you've experienced a lot, you get to put what you preach into practice as well.
Yeah.
You also do a series about the Votan, right? Because this is your
right. So I've played Votan very extensively over the last 7 or 8 months. It started as me being, I don't know about you, I got a little bit of PTSD when 10th landed. I was kind of a bit upset with the nature of the game and the way it was. And I play Eldar, I play CSM, I play GSC. And I played a bit of GSC, and I was looking at these indexes, and I was just feeling really bad about the whole situation. I just didn't really enjoy it very much. So then suddenly, I read some stats and it goes, oh, Leagues of Votan, 29% win rate. And I'd got some Votan at Christmas, and this stupid little thing in my brain just goes, go on, have a go, paint them and see what you can do.
Yeah, rooting for the underdog.
Yeah. I'm a historian of Africa by background. That's my work. So I'm a bit of a sucker for underdogs, right? I like underdog stories. I'm very interested in the history of power, and I always tend to side with the little guys. So I think I can't help but do that in 40K. It's probably a weak spot I have. When something I play is strong, my brain just turns off it very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. But then obviously Votan ended up pretty good, right? They got a good slate. They ended up a lot better, and I was having a great time with them. So I've done the Rock and Stone podcast, which goes out sort of semi-regularly. That's with James Marsden of Toys of Mass Destruction and Jake Harding of Vanguard Tactics. So if you're a Votan player, Votan main, like I've been for the last 6 months, I actually have a t-shirt with Votan main on. Don't think I can wear it if I'm playing Thousand Suns at Nottingham, unfortunately, but we'll see.
I'm like...
Yeah, I know. do check that out. We talk a lot of Votan tactics on there, and we're sort of always putting out sort of strategy and tactics segments, and Davey, as you mentioned, does a load for Tyranids, so I'm keen to do some for Votan. I'm going to wait and see how the slate affects them. I'm going to do some for Votan. It's not an incredibly complex army to play, but there's little things you can do to make it much easier. And I will, once I've got my head around it, try and do one for Thousand Suns as well. But let's see how we go. I need to demonstrate I know how to play them first.
but no doubt you succeed.
We'll give it a go.
Yeah. But today, we are not talking about factions. Today, we are talking about still competitive play.
Absolutely.
But a different aspect of it. An aspect that touches, I think, every single one of us. We have better days. We have worse days. We sometimes go into events hoping for the best, and then the experience doesn't always turn out the best.
Yeah.
This might be because of our losses. This might be because of bad dice. This might be because of bad conduct at the table, not necessarily ours. So, yeah let's start with this. Let's start cracking this nut with maybe your stories or your experience. Like, has your 40K experience, competitive 40K experience, been always a bed of roses. I mean, there are a lot of like
in terms of sort of conduct and player conduct. Is that what?
That's what I'm talking about. Have all the events that you have gone to ended positively in terms of conduct, or have there been any situations where you were like, "Oh, that guy is a dickhead. I don't want to play him anymore," or anything like that?
So I think there's a lot of different layers to this, and I think as you've already alluded to, actually part of how we feel in games is about how the game goes. And there's things we can control about that, and there's things we can't control about that. And actually that's also not really our opponent's fault either, or a lot of it, right? And then there's things around your conduct, your manners, and your etiquette, and how people conduct themselves. Now, I would say I think the 40K community in the UK is an incredibly friendly and welcoming place, and I've been made to feel phenomenally welcome from the moment I first started, right? There's sort of long-time players in the UK, people like Mike Duff or Mark Cromwellholm or Mikey Herbert with his events, who when I was first starting and I was a terrified little noob and I didn't know what was going on, were all incredibly friendly to me and made me feel incredibly welcome. And you can have these games where you don't have a hope in hell, but you feel so well looked after, right? And that's the kind of the new player experience. And I think it's very possible to lose incredibly hard and still have a great time. And so I can the example that comes, so Jay Middlecut, who's a WTC ref these days, does Mohawk Miniatures, incredible guy. We had a game at an event very recently. Now Jay's an incredible player, but knights are not in a good way, right? And then he hits Votan, who I love killing knights. So we have this game where like the outcome's never in doubt, but Jay is A, laughing the whole way through, joking the whole way through, teaching me shit the whole way through, because he's just a really good player, right? So even when he's in a situation where he's not going to win the game because it's just the matchup and the meta, he is still pulling all these incredible tricks, and I learned so much from him. So I think the game situations, such as they are, I think if you go into it with the right attitude on both sides, things that I think I see people describing all the time as the worst things in the world can actually be absolutely fine and can be fun, right? But I think that requires goodwill from everybody. It requires a little bit of calm and peace about the nature of the game that we play, which is this crazy, lopsided, ever-changing thing, which is radically unfair, and as far as I can see will continue to be radically unfair. and that's kind of the point. And obviously the point of competing is finding these things and leaning into these things, and people like to do that and other people don't. And then there's the whole field of conduct, and there's so many different things to this, right? About, you know, how do people engage with each other on the table? How polite are you? How generous or giving are you? Are you playing by intent? Are you helping each other to play the best game that you can, or to what extent do you take that? And that's where I think there's a lot of different little ways you can look at it. And I think you will gradually over time learn what it is that you as a player and person want and need from games. And I think being very honest about that with yourself is very important, because that gives you your start point. And then I think the key thing is always communicating these things and being very clear with each other and being very friendly. But I think in my experience, you know, whenever I go into games with people, first and foremost, I'm wanting to meet a new person and learn something about them during a game. And I always feel like if I do that and they do the same, I mean, they will learn about me because I'll talk about myself for 3 hours and there's nothing they can do about it, because that's just what I'm good at, and it's gonna happen, right?
We can only whip out the clock and hope that you respect the clock.
Put me on the clock for exactly. Anecdotes. Yeah, no, you're done. And so I think if you come away from games like that, I mean, it's that thing of, you know, you play someone, however the game went, if you saw them again at an event, would you say, hey, I would like to live in a world where everyone would do that, right? Because if you do it that way, you're basically making five mates every time you go to an event. And certainly with our UK circuit, we're all in the same halls every couple of months, right? There's 300 of us that go to the same things. By the time you've done, you know, a couple of years of these events, you know a lot of people, and it's a really lovely thing. And you're talking outside, you're talking at lunch, you're meeting people. And I think if you're playing the game the right way and everyone's doing that, then that's what happens. And it's this lovely growing web of people. And this is how I end up nattering on stuff like this to you, right? It's that gradual diffusion of meeting people and talking to people. And so I think if you're doing things right, that's what happens. And I think maybe there are some players for whom that doesn't come as easily or as readily. And I think that's probably because other things start getting twisted and start getting involved. But I also think there's moments and where we can all fall victim to particular traps and frustrations and issues. And I think, again, this is a mad game. And sometimes it's working out when it's getting the best of you and when you need to, you know, be a little bit more self-aware of yourself and handling that. Mm-hmm. So that's a big long ramble. I apologize.
No, that's very good. That's exactly what I was going for. And that's exactly why I invited you, because I knew you had plenty of views and a lot to share. So to give it a little bit of structure, maybe let's imagine that, you know, we are going to an event and we have everything prepared and so on and so on. And then one thing that I always wonder when I approach the table and I meet a new guy and I ask, like, do you know what, I don't know, insert X army does? Yeah. Like, do you know what Death Guard does? Do you know what the Tyranids do? One of the things that I notice is that I start talking about my army, talking about all the intricacies and so on and so on. Mm. And there is always a point where in the back of my head, there is this little voice that says, you're revealing too much.
How deep
do you go?
Oh, it's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think I subscribe to the belief that I think that first conversation is probably the one in which, and people will differ on this, but that's the one where you try and give people as much of a heads up as you can, right? The kind of explaining the fundamentals and the basics and the tricks. And then I think there's plenty of comp players who would say, well, I've done that now and I've given them all of the key things and now it's on them to navigate it, right? But I do think it's really important that up front you're very honest about it. But the other thing about it is, it's all well and good to say, I can move twice and sometimes I can move three times or whatever. This is what I've been doing with Magnus and other bullshit all, for the last couple of weeks. It's a very different thing to actually see that, right? And so it's hard. I think even warning people sometimes isn't going to fully convey what that looks like and how that works. And I guess you do have the option of just rocking up and saying, have you had a look at the list? And they say, yes. And you go, great. And you go from there. That's a totally valid thing to do because that's on them. That's their job. I because I am low key obsessed with this stuff and I do it all the time. And I write for Goonhammer and other things. I'm quite lucky in that I don't tend to go up to tables and not know what my opponent's list does. Mm-hmm. Right. I'll usually know what it does. So that saves me time and effort on the table. So I don't tend to need to do the questions. But I think good opponents ask good questions. So you're going to answer those, right? If someone's not going to walk into a situation without asking and wanting to know things. So I don't know that you can give too much away at that stage. As I guess you don't need to get into the mechanics of, oh, well, often I will shell this and teleport this here and come and kill you there. And, you know, I'm not going to come and get this angle over here. You don't need to be telling them that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the practicals of how the game is played. But I guess the way that, especially with the way that 10th is now, you know, you've got your six strats, you've got a few enhancements, you've got your particular set of army rules. All of the key things don't take very long to rattle through.
Yeah, definitely not in this edition compared to the previous
exactly
one.
That. And I always try to think about this as well from the perspective I once was, whereas a new player, and I think I would hate to think that there were new players coming to events and playing people who weren't ready to walk them through the basics of what was going on and what else was happening, right? And then I think once you get up to the top tables and the top players, people are a little bit more relaxed and tend to know the ins and outs of what's going on already, and so you don't need to have those conversations. But usually when there's any sense that does need to be happening, I strongly encourage it. I'm trying to think about it, but I can't pinpoint a game where I'm like, oh, I lost because I told them before the game what my army did, right? Can you? I can't think of one. I don't think it matters that much, right? I guess, yeah, it's yeah. I can't off the top of my head.
No. I think the opposite potentially could happen, and I noticed this even about myself.
Yeah,
in some TTS games, like. Obviously, if you like, I don't go to as many events as probably you do or the majority of our listeners do, but I do play in like online leagues, for example, and it does happen. Like, we also have like our local scene, but for example, in our local Northern Poland scene, we don't really see too many very competitive Eldar. Like, you don't get those, you know, top end builds and so on. You have people who like mix and match a little bit of Drukhari, Harlequins, Eldar, and so on, but you don't have those cutthroat sort of builds readily available. Well, yes and no. That's a positive thing if you go to an RTT locally, but it's a negative thing if you go to, you know, we have higher ambitions and higher aspirations, and you need to seek that experience
somewhere else. You do.
Exactly. So So, you know, so I had a game on TTS where I have played in the local RTT against Eldar. I saw more or less what they do, and then the guy came in to into a TTS game, and he said, "So yeah, I'm playing Eldar. Do you know what they do?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I've seen it on the table." And so we cut like his explanations, you know, short. It was very brief, and then we started playing, and he pulled off some stuff that I either know but had forgotten, or I didn't know.
Sometimes you
And
just have to see it, right? You just have to see
then
it, man.
he does it like, you know, he phantasms or he does something with the Wayleaper that is really annoying, and he gets CP for free that I didn't know. And
Oh, I
and
hate
I'm
the way
like,
it leaves it so much.
and I yeah, exactly. And but, you know, and I'm at that table, I'm like, "Oh, so you can do this. Oh, that's cool. Oh, I wish my army had that, blah, blah, blah." You know, and I start like doing this thing, which is completely stupid, but I guess it stems from not knowing what your opponent does. Like,
And
had I
you can feel helpless, right? You can feel very helpless in those
exactly,
situations.
and you get that feeling of, you know, that's unfair, that's stupid, that's I don't know. But it would have been different had I done the research, had I actually checked the army before. It's completely on me that I didn't know what I signed up for. Like, you know,
Of
I went
course.
with my army and hoped for the best, but actually that research could have helped. So I guess this is one of those things that you probably should do even before the event. Going into the event, make sure that you're ready for, you know, the top five, six bad boys that are out there in the meta right now, that you know what they do, you know how to tackle them and so on, because
Completely.
you won't get surprised, you won't get that negative experience because you are prepared and you know what to expect. Even if they beat you to the ground, you probably could expect that.
And this is one of those ones where I think what your goals are and what your hopes are matter, right? So like if you're, let's say you want to get better at competing and you want to win more games and you're like, I want to go 4-1, I want to go 5-0 at a GT, or I want to win RTTs, whatever it is. At that stage, if you've decided you're going to do that, whatever army you choose to run and why you choose to run it, like if you're a snowflake like me and you want to run something weird and you don't like getting your Eldar out when they're too strong or whatever else it is, I've got a Wraith Knight on the shelf that's not forgiven me for not using him for the whole however many months he was actually
Okay,
good.
man.
He's really cross with me. But I think you have to remember that just because you feel that way, other people won't. And there's always going to be something out there that's scarier and better than your army, or even if your army's good, there's going to be that thing out there that just drowns it or just counters it or whatever else. And the only way you get better at dealing with that is playing against it and understanding it. So you know, that's something we have in our team now. We have a thing called Kick On, which is when we try and meet every couple of weeks and just have a group of us playing like one or two TTS games. And typically that will involve, well, let's throw the scary new thing at something and see what it does, right? There's no point not understanding it. We've had tons of people playing new Necrons, for example, in recent times. We had new AdMech out. I've been playing into CSM the last day or two as well, because it's like you know, as much as I'd love to avoid CSM, I need to be able to deal with that. And if you're interested in playing up at those levels and beating those things, that's what you have to do. And so if you look to your best teams in the world, you know, if we go international, you're Poland's, or you go, you know, national Ignite, right? Those teams are so prepped. They know exactly what it's going to do. And they're not losing any sleep over the fact it's a bit strong. They're going to go in and do everything they can and get the outcome they can, the best
Absolutely.
outcome they can. On the other flip side of it, if you're someone who's playing for fun and wants goes to events mainly as a social thing, you can choose to avoid ever worrying about what that does in most of your life. So what do you gain? You don't lose hours thinking about it or playing against it. What's the cost? If you play it at a GT, you're going to get smashed. And but that's 3 hours of getting smashed once versus having to do hours and hours of work behind the scenes to understand something. And those are your trade-offs, right? You can't have it every which way. You can either be trying to go in with good knowledge and practice, in which case you got to work hard, and even then you might not make it, but at least you'll have a good go. Or you can be oblivious. I was oblivious for the first year playing. I had no idea what was going on. I was running around with my Ulthway list with Eldrad, and I remember very specifically I went to Beachhead. And if I was the level of clued up in the game I am now, I would know what happened was I played against Ben Jones, who's a wonderful player, playing the Broviathan Iron Hands Dreadnought list, which was a wonderful list. I didn't know any of these things. I just saw this list. I ran my whole Eldar army into it, killed three intercessors and got tabled, and was like, wow,
Yeah,
that was a thing that
that happens.
happened. And at that stage in where I was at as a player, that was how that was always going to go. And Ben was nothing but lovely about it. And I remember at the time being a bit like, oh, I don't like that very much, a bit ruffled, a bit cross, I hate Iron Hands, blah, blah, blah. But you look at it now and you go, yeah, that's all right. Top player playing a top list at a time, and you went into it with your newbie list, and the predictable outcome occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's about understanding your own expectations, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that.
If you go to just have fun, you should have fun.
Yeah.
No matter what the other people bring. Like, if you win, great. If you lose, well, be honest with yourself. If you came here to have fun and just play your army because you love your army, great. But, you know, if you were hoping for the best results, on an off chance, potentially you could, but
yeah,
it usually doesn't go like that.
Exactly.
And on the flip side, I strongly encourage all our listeners to either join our Discord or follow us on Facebook, because we do those daily posts about like tournament recaps, and
oh, that's so good. Yes.
My son talks about his, like, you know, thoughts and stuff that he's analyzing right now. I do Thoughtful Thursdays, and one of the Thoughtful Thursdays that I did was not about like neurodiversity and so on. It was about something that I learned from Pumba, who is on the Polish national team. Mm. Because I joined the Polish national team Discord and I was playing in a scrim, and, you know, I submitted my Tyranids list, but I submitted a list that I enjoyed playing that looked good on paper. Mm-hmm. I haven't even tested it yet. I wanted to use the scrim as a test, but the time of like pairings came, and I opened the pairings table, and like I put everything either in orange or yellow, but some were also red. There was no green in there.
Yeah.
And Pumba didn't aim it at me back then, or maybe it was like a conclusion from the previous scrim that they had. But in one of the podcasts that he did, and then we had a conversation as well in Discord, he said, like, if your matrix is going to look like, you know, leaves in autumn, so basically oranges and reds and yellows, then maybe you should reconsider whether bringing that list or that army is what you should be doing. Because however brutal that sounds, if you commit to playing competitively, you need to bring something that that can help your team. And it sounds so obvious now that you know, I speak this out loud, or I wrote the article about that. But back then, when he said it for the first time, it was very eye-opening to me that my list didn't help anyone. Like,
but there's a kind of cognitive jump that happens there, right? Because I think so many players, especially when they're starting, you play one army and you go to some events and you paint it and you collect it. And for a lot of people, that's what they do for most of their hobby lives. So this idea that, oh, your army's just a tool, and if the tool's no good, you put it in the shed and you get a different one out. That's a long way away from how a lot of people think about the game, right, and engage with the game. But I think that's where teams is great, because the whole team's mentality really helps you with that. And I've actually listened to a lot of your stuff lately where I think your argument that 40k is looking great in teams right now, but it's still very ropey in singles, I think that's completely valid. And I wonder whether that's just the game that we're always going to have to some extent. I'm never sold 40k fully works as a pure singles game. I think something's always a bit squiffy up at the top. And I think teams really lets you even all of these different things out, and that can help you to kind of manage that. So I do think teams is a really fun way to play the game when singles is a bit more ropey.
But teams, I guess, is an environment where you leave less to luck.
Yes.
Because in singles, you cannot really predict your like winning path.
No,
you don't know who you are going to meet in the first game. You can assume that the better you do, the more complicated it will become later on in later rounds, but you never know how exactly it's going to go, whether you're going to face your direct counters, if your army has them, and so on. While in teams, there is less of that surprise factor, because it can be, I'm looking for the right word, last time I said that you can meander between like the negative pairings. I was hoping to get a better word right now. You can basically almost design your path.
Yes, you can. Yes,
you can. Tell your captain and your coaches and so on what this army does well, yeah. what it doesn't, and then they, or you collectively draw conclusions like this shouldn't be an attacker or this shouldn't be a defender, rather.
Completely.
Yeah, and so on and so on. So that's
a huge part of the appeal for me. I really like that, and I think that adds a lot to the game. And once you start, the thing is, and this is exactly why the poor Votan have been on the bench, because once you start seeing matrixes everywhere you look when you close your eyes, you look at the armies you play in that way. And that's something where, with ITT coming up, I've been looking at Votan, and I've always had an awareness of, well, Votan struggles into the very top armies, but it's very good into the rest, and it's got things like Necrons tied down. And then obviously we've got this new Necron book, and I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't know that it does now. At which point you start going, well, what's your job, Votan? I love you very much, but like, where are you fitting in this five? If it's like, well, don't worry guys, I can go and lose to this and this, and then you're sort of like, okay, at that stage I have to rethink, right, and sort of start assessing what my other options are. And that, again, I'm in a position now where I've done this a long time and I've got a few armies and I'm flexible in that way. But it takes a long time to get to that point, right? And, yeah. I don't think you have to get to that point either. I think you can very happily play one or two armies and avoid getting dragged into that. But I think in that sort of collective environment that is the big tournament, there's always going to be the chance that that world finds you one way or another for a round, probably only one round if you're doing that, maybe mm-hmm. maybe a couple if you're unlucky, and you'll get some silly experiences, but you can still make fun of them. You just have to work together and recognize how silly the situation is, right?
Yeah, but the bottom line is, and we've rambled a little bit away from the topic, but so to bring it back to those table side manners and so
yeah.
Your behavior at the table and your opponent's behavior at the table will largely depend on your mutual understanding of the situation, the mission, completely. The armies, the rules, completely. And so on and so on. The better you understand something, the less there are going to be gotchas, the fewer there are going to be gotchas, and the fewer there are going to be nasty surprises, simply, or things that you did not understand, comprehend that potentially could happen.
Yes.
So even before you embark on this journey of competitive play, make sure that you simply like speak to yourself and ask yourself that question: what is my army? What can my army do? What can you know? Where it struggles, etc., etc., and so on. So do this analysis. Now you are at the table. You are discussing stuff with your opponents.
Yep.
Potentially, and then one of the things that people, especially the pro players, talk about a lot is that play by intent. It has become like, it's the buzzword of 40K today, so to say.
Yes.
So, and I think, you know, your podcast covered it already.
Yeah, we had Tony Chu on, England captain, to talk about it, which was a really interesting conversation, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, and you play way more than me, so maybe you could explain to our listeners, the less seasoned ones, what is intent? What is playing by intent?
Yeah,
and
how does it work exactly? I think intent in general is a shorthand where the two players are kind of communicating a lot of what they're doing very clearly to each other. And it's intended to stop those kind of edge case moments where you might argue about, oh, can I see this? Can I reach this? Is this charge 6? Is it 7? What it generally involves is being very precise and measuring and checking different things and saying, look, I'm putting this here. My intent is that I've now cut the angle so you can't jump out and shoot this thing. Do we agree that's the case? If they agree that's the case, that's great. That's done. I'm putting this here. My intent is if you try to charge this, you're 10 away. So it's a bad charge. Do we agree that's the case? And so I think that's a big part of intent. Now, like a lot of things, it's quite nebulous and people end up using it in all sorts of different ways. So and we got into this in the show, and it can become this kind of, oh, I'm going to have my cake and my intent is also to eat it. Is that okay? Like, it's that kind of situation of like, I'm going to have everything I want. Also, I never meant anything I did wrong. Also, I meant all every little, and it's so you have to be a little bit careful and make sure you don't get taken advantage of. But when it's done right, it's both people working together, agreeing distances, agreeing angles, all these different things. And actually, if you play on TTS, it's fascinating now because you can draw all these lines and have these little orbits. I mean, I played Brian Sipe on TTS a couple of times. Amazing player. and you just watch them literally drawing these angles and demonstrating on the board, look, I am safe here, here, here. Do you agree with that? And you're like, yeah, I can literally see it. I've never seen it visualized like that. And so I think people find it way easier because on TTS, because it's a weird half, you know, half game, it really helps if everyone's helping each other out. So I think it's become more and more in common, more and more common because people do it that way as well. But in the main, yeah, it's about being very clear about what you're doing, making sure the two players understand exactly the page that they're on, and saving time over any like little disputes or measurements or anything else.
Yeah. So in theory, it's fantastic. In theory, it's something that we all should do.
In theory, it's etiquette, right? Yeah.
Exactly. However, as you've mentioned, and as I also already said it, there are instances where people try to weaponize it. It feels like.
Yeah.
I remember back in probably that was 9th edition when we had faction secondaries still. Yeah. I faced a Dark Angels player who started the game saying something along those lines. Unless I say differently, army is permanently in Devastator Doctrine.
Yes.
And unless I say differently, they had the secondary where they need to basically sit on the objective and just
stubborn
cards,
defiance.
Cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
So I don't miss that.
neither do I. But he said something along those lines. So yeah, I'm always in Devastator Doctrine. And unless I say differently, this unit here always does the action. How do you feel about that? How would you feel about that?
So,
and is that intent, or is that just?
I think
shortcut?
that is intent, right? Because that's saying, this is my plan. This is what I'm going to do, and it's that shorthand again. We are saving time, and also we are. It's one of those stupid little things that can be forgotten. It's like the picking your mandrakes up in the sky or whatever it is. It's the kind of, I'm going to do this. It makes sense for me to do this. And with all the other things in the game, it's exactly the kind of little thing that gets forgotten when we're jumping between phases and everything else. So I in general feel okay with that. Now, I would fully understand, and I think there are plenty of players that do exist that would say every single move needs to be, you know, accounted for. And I'm not, you know, we're not going to do that. And so I would understand it. But I think that's one of those examples where it's like, especially with things like actions, where it's like, there's always going to be something not doing anything else somewhere for actions. And if you do shoot it or charge with it, then you've done something completely different. So you have said otherwise. So you've broken your contract. So it's fine. So I don't mind that kind of thing per se. You know, just as if someone brings on a little squad of dudes in a corner somewhere and they've got investigate signals and we get to the end of the turn and they've forgotten to tell me they're investigating signals, I will assume that's what they're there for. They're not done anything else. There's no other reason for them to be there. That's fine. I'm not going to hold anybody to that. And I think that's where different types of play would come in. If it's going to be literally everything needs to be fully spoken for and accounted for, otherwise it didn't happen, that's fine. But both players need to play that way and need to be very clear. If it's going to be, okay, we can have little things that keep it running smoothly, then we'll both do the same. And I always think it's those kinds of things that wouldn't impact anything else. Those are the ones you can do that. Like mandrakes are going to be sat at the back somewhere and they're going to pop up and down. Unless your opponent's shelling them to death, they're not going to be involved in any way. It's not going to change anyone's lives. Now, if your opponent suddenly goes, oh, I'd actually like my mandrakes to be on the ground and I'm going to change this, it's like, well, no, you've said you're taking them up, so they're going up, right? So it's kind of, you do have to stand by your word. And I think with all manners and etiquette in game, let's face it, in life, the challenge is being consistent. That's the hard thing. It's all well and good. We know we come up with some rules. We come up with a way we want to live our lives. And it's what you do the day that that's difficult or you want to do something different or you feel differently. That's when we find out what people are like, right? And I think with a lot of this stuff, that is the challenge, is being consistent and fair. But I think with something like that, yeah, you can have a conversation. You could say, I'd rather just you keep doing it and keep declaring it so that we don't forget about it and so that it's all above board, and I'll do the same for mine. I think that would be a perfectly fine conversation to have. I do think in wargaming sometimes we're just a bit afraid to have conversations where it might get a bit, you know, like anything, any kind of tension, it might get a little bit, if people like to avoid that in general.
Mm-hmm. So at some point, well, when we were talking, you said that there are good questions that you need to ask when you face your opponent for the first time, when you face his army for the first time. So you can we can probably weave in the topic of intent also into those questions. So what are some good questions that you can ask your opponent at the beginning of the game that help you and potentially could help him or her as
completely.
Well.
So let's talk about the kinds of things, because I think one of the sort of underlying things with this is what happens in games that sometimes make people feel bad or feel unhappy, mm-hmm. right? And usually it's when they are in some way caught out by something they didn't expect, or in some way feel like the game's been pushed in a direction they didn't understand and weren't ready for, everything else. And a big part of that is just knowledge, actually. And I do think a lot of people end up feeling bad about things they just didn't understand. But equally, there's always a sense of, well, I should have been informed this would happen. So let's talk about World Eaters, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to move this far into the middle of the board, and then I can advance and charge, and I can be in your deployment zone. So you need to know, do things scout move? You need to know, do things advance and charge? You need to know, do things forward deploy? Do they jump up in the sky and come down somewhere else? All of those things which disrupt the normal rules of I move, I shoot, I charge, and which ultimately are what make armies interesting, let's face it. You know, Thousand Sons, can you move after I've phantasmed? Yes, I'm coming after you. I'm not letting you get away. All sorts of little things like that. Those are the things that is in, especially in 10th, where I think a lot of armies have this same suite of things, and they have with the universal special rules, there are a very specific number of different things. Can you move away when I charge you? Can you make yourself untargetable outside of 12 inches? Lots of little things, and it's a bit of a situation by situation. And hopefully, if you've asked at the beginning of the game about their army, you've got most of these. But obviously, because different units do different things, you do need to be watching out for it. Mm-hmm. And what I tend to do is whenever I'm going into a situation at a different point in the game, my brain goes, how could this go horribly wrong? And I work out and I think of a couple of different things. And then that usually helps me to remember. So it's like, if I come here, are you going to be able to move away? If I come here, are you going to be able to stop me shooting you? If I move over this way, do you have ways to reach me from here? All those kinds of things. And it's anticipation, right? And I think that's where you can be checking and avoiding getting caught out. And it's, like I say, an opponent who's being above board will answer questions very honestly. I think it is on you to ask the right questions, to, you know, a bit of an iRobot quote, but that's very important. You do need to ask the right questions to get the right answers. And again, it's that thing where the higher level you get to, the more you anticipate, the more you are aware of. But it's I think those kinds of things can help you to avoid being caught out, can avoid those kind of feel bad moments, and also help you to learn about your opponent's army. Because that's whatever level you are, when you play a different army for the first time, you're learning about it. I always say you're going to learn about it the first time and you might beat it the second time. That's usually the way it works, right? It's mm-hmm. very hard to beat something that you don't know anything about. So you need to learn about it. So ask the questions.
Yep. I would say, to me, there are like two sets of questions that you always should consider asking. The first one are sort of like the general questions, and those for you, for example. By the way, am I breaking up? Because I think you did
very briefly then. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So sorry to everyone, but
only for just a second. You've been fine.
Yeah,
the rest of the time.
It's already the second time that it's happening. So sorry, everyone. I'm on cable, but somehow my internet breaks up still. Anyway,
I wouldn't know what that's like. That never happens to me.
But anyway, back to what I was saying. So the general questions would be about like ranges, doing pre-measurements. So like pre-measure how far your opponent's model can go, mm-hmm. and then how far it can shoot. Like knowing the ranges of weapons, like the last cannon is 48, but a bolter is 24 or 12 or something, is crucial. The same goes for spells. So. Yeah. So that will be number one. You know, use dice, put them on the table to show where someone can reach you, cannot reach you, and so on. Yeah. Can you see me? Can you not see me? All that stuff. You can ask those questions. Can you, I don't know, shoot through walls or stuff?
Yeah.
And then there is the second kind of the second set of questions, which if you forget the first set, then the second one is, I think, even more important, which is questions specific for your army. Or questions that specifically help your army. Yes. So, like, let's assume that I'm playing Death Guard, for example. Think of the strengths of your army, like Death Guard, and then ask the questions to your opponent, you know, trying to pinpoint the things that your opponent can do to mitigate your strengths or somehow, you know, work around them. So like, if you want to charge them and hold them in combat, the right question would be, can you fall back and charge, or can you fall back and shoot? Because we want to hide our Plague Marines in combat. We don't really want you, the opponent, to just run away.
Exactly.
Yeah, or like, you know, do you have lone ops and so on? And then it's also a good question to know, like Typhus, for example, he can target lone ops with his spells. So it's probably a good thing to remind your opponent about. But it's also like, if you're playing against an opponent and you hear that he has a spell, you can ask, like, is it a shooting attack? Is it like another attack? Does it mitigate any of the game rules that we know that something should be untargettable but is, in a way?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Stuff like that. So think of your strengths and what gives you an advantage in the game, and then ask your opponent about the things that could potentially, you know, put a hurdle ahead of your plan or something.
Completely.
Like that.
And that's always going to just mean that you're going into situations better informed, and you're much less likely to hit one of those moments where you're like, oh, I feel helpless. I didn't know what was going to happen. And now I feel like I've lost the game or whatever else. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Good. One more thing, or well, not one more, but another thing that I wanted to ask about, which is fairly common, I guess, but it's also, I guess, a matter of the social contract that you have with your opponent.
Yeah.
Is the topic of takebacks, like allowing your opponent to.
Such a big one.
Yeah. And I must say that I've seen, I think it was on stream, and it was one tournament in America where Anthony Vanilla was playing someone. I can't remember who. So apologies to, if you're listening to that, Anthony's opponent. But essentially, it was a game where two pro players were playing against one another. And that you could, to someone who was looking at the game for the first time, it looked like only takebacks. Like, the guys were literally putting something on the table, realizing that it didn't, that this move didn't make sense, and allowing each other to take takebacks.
It was a
handicapped game almost, where, you know, both players had the handicap and they could basically redo stuff and so on.
Yeah.
So to what extent do you allow your opponents to do takebacks, and do you like set any conditions? Like, your takeback for my takeback, or like...
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I think there are certain limits, right? And we talk about this in our team all the time. And there's the question. There's two different things. If you're playing a practice game and a learning game, we do takebacks all the time. So when I play Ed, right, Ed's a wonderful sporting opponent, and we'll have a game and I've got some janky trick I've set up and I roll a one, and he goes, let's just say that you did, because we're practicing the averages. The average is this thing happens. So let's say that we did, keep going. And when we're practicing, we want to have a good close game that's tough for everyone involved and goes to the later round. So we always try and make sure we get to that without any sort of big, silly mistakes, right? So that we can see as much of a matchup as we can. I think a lot of top players actually play their tournaments as if they're still in that practicing learning mode, especially when they play each other. And I think that's great. I think if you're both at that same level and skill level, great, you can do that. What I think with takebacks is that, and that kind of perfect game theory of, what if we all just did everything right and no one made a mistake, is if you do that when two players are very different skill levels, it's very beneficial to the better player, because they spot and notice all these different things and they get all these different things, and it's not very fair, right? Unless they're literally taking things back for their opponent, which doesn't tend to happen that much, right? And I think in general, both players need to be on the same page with takebacks for them to work. I think within the same phase, not like, oh, I'm halfway through my turn, can I go back and do this? I think that within the same phase is fairly reasonable with those kinds of things. I think when a very obvious, glaring error has been made, I often think this with Overwatch, right? If someone's run 10 witches into a flamer and you're like, okay, you didn't see the flamer there. It's just sad for everyone involved to barbecue a bunch of witches for no reason. So it's like, obviously, you know, no one's playing the game where they set out to get barbecued. So those kinds of little things I'm generally happy to be flexible on. I remember back in the day, stuff like Fights Last was so bad for this, right? People running into Fights Last and then being, and it's, but I think when you're at the top levels of competition,
it's entirely valid to say we make our mistakes and we'll play this properly and we'll, you know, and we'll have it both ways. And I think a lot of the very best players do that. But it's equally possible to play it in a generous fashion. But again, you need to both be on the same page. And I think there are going to be situations where with take backs, you're never going to have, oh, I made 10 mistakes, he made 10 mistakes. Everyone's happy. That's not how it works. Someone might make 11, someone might 9, and it might be two of those 11 that lose you the game, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not going to be fair. And again, I know it's a bit sad to keep stressing this on the podcast, but 40K, it's not a fair game, guys. I'm very sorry. It's just not a fair universe we live in. It's very fun. It's very weird and wacky, but we aren't going to get that glorious sort of egalitarian sunrise here, I don't think, in this game. That's not how it's going
to
go.
You know, it's down to us at the end of the day, right?
Exactly.
How we want to go about it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
So I know players... So, like, if I do something stupid, like, again, putting something in front of the Redeemer with, you know, all the flamers.
Not the Redeemer.
Yeah, or stuff like that. And I do get killed. I did have that situation where an opponent asked, like, would you like to take that back? And, you know, it deep in my heart, yes.
Yeah.
But I said, no, listen, I won't learn if I don't actually suffer.
And that's the risk, right? I think sometimes mistakes are crucial. So first ever game playing Elder when I was a little newbie, and I got nine Dark Reapers out from behind a wall, and I shot them, and I forgot to fire and fade, and I went on and did something else. Sweet. And nine Dark Reapers got obliterated, right? Aww. And the guy was like, do you want to fire and fade them back? And I was like, nope, because I am not going to forget this. And I got completely destroyed, and I never forgot to fire and fade ever again, right? And so it's those things where, again, it's a funny story, it's just a game, and you can learn an awful lot from those mistakes. And actually some people learn much better by, you know, by having that tough game or that tough memory in your head. So again, I had a practice game today into new Necrons, and I played a couple of things, in my opinion, not quite right. And I learned so much more by doing that and playing through and seeing what those things were, right? And so you learn very important lessons for next time. So you don't want to try and live in a world where you don't make mistakes. You don't want to try and live in a world where you just always can get out of whatever thing that you did. And I do think you need to be careful. Again, you don't want to be in a situation where someone's just taking a lot and not giving you very much, right? You know, they're getting to correct all their little things. They're making you stand by any decision that you make. That doesn't feel good. And that's not in the spirit of it. But there can definitely be easy, simple moments to be nice and be generous and help someone out. Especially in situations where the game's not even on the line at any point, right? You know, it can be these facile little things, but it's not that important.
All right. I have one more thing. I mean, I have a couple, but I'll ask one more thing from me, and then we can jump to our listener
questions. Yeah, let's do it. That's great.
They do cover some of the things that I wanted to ask.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, yeah.
So one more thing about like manners at the table and proper behavior at the table is playing with and managing the clock.
Oh God!
So,
yeah.
So many new players, especially who come to tournaments, might not be used to might not have the experience of playing with a clock at all.
Like,
not everyone has you know, a chess background, but also not everyone has this sort of cutthroat, again, competitive tournament attitude.
Yeah.
And suddenly your opponent takes out the clock and says, we're playing this, the tournament demands it that we play on a clock.
Yeah.
So have you been there, and how do you feel about playing the clock? And does the clock add like extra pressure to you, or is it actually something comforting that helps?
So I don't love clocks, and I say this as someone where I play very fast. I'm very fortunate in that sense. I play very quickly, and the number of when I was playing GSC, people would put me on a clock and they would time out, and I'd be like, "Do you want some of the GSC time? Is that what you want? You did this to yourself, but the GSC are going to help you out now. You know, look at me with my 120 dudes, and someone can't keep up. Okay, that's fine, but I don't mind it. I'm pretty quick, and I understand the concern. I understand the weaponizing of time and the playing slow and timing people out. We don't want those situations, right? And so something I'll often say, especially if I'm playing something quite hoardy, because that's when people worry, right? They see a bunch of models and they go, oh, I'm worried this is going to take forever and you're going to eat my time. I will always reassure my opponent at the start of the game, we're getting the five turns here, especially like a situation like your opponent's on end of turn, right? Like that can be really stressful because they know there's some, they need more points at the end. And actually the way the shape of the game goes, they will be hard done by if they don't get that final round. I never let someone in that situation not get to the crucial bits, right? I'm always, but again, I'm fortunate as much as I can play quickly and get things done. But I do reassure people with that. I think at the top levels, I think you need clocks in as much as it smooths out any risk of that kind of that risk of weaponizing of time. And I've seen endless examples of people being very generous with clock time. And actually, once you get to the end and there's all the extra time, they're happy to do that. I remember again Brian Sipe, who I just really really like. You know, he got to the semifinals or whatever it was at one of the big GTs, and his opponent timed out, and he just gave them the time they needed, and he ended up losing that game. I think in so many, it's another situation where you find out who you are in those moments, right? When you get to that moment. I had a classic game against a mad lad on Tau with a triple storm surge, 120 crew, insane game, and we got to that point where he timed out. And it's like, it's a draw if he doesn't time out. So let's get the draw. The draw is a good story. That's where we're at. You've earned that. We've had a great game. Let's do that, right? But that's where I think for a lot of players in those moments, the actual outcome and the rules are less important. You know, it's not the important thing there. But I think having the clock there as the insurance does protect you from that situation of being slow played. I think the fortunate thing if you're a newer player is if you play someone good, being slow played by them ain't going to be your problem, right? that's not going to be how that one goes. It's going to feel a lot like being fast played. So I don't think this one bothers or applies to new players quite so much. It's often when you get to those kind of upper middle levels where you start breaking through into some of those tougher games, that's where some of these situations will happen. I do think practicing with the clock is good. I do think being able to play your army quickly is an important staple of playing tournaments. I think that's something that you get better at the more that you do. For your first couple of events, you might well not finish all your games, and that's okay. And you can be very heads up about that. But if you are playing someone who's taking the event very seriously, I think being very honest about where you're at as a player is important, and then they can make the appropriate decisions in and around that, and you can communicate together, right? Mm-hmm. They're interesting things. And I do, as I say, there's something in the GSC player in me, just my hackles rise when people get clocks out. I'm like, what are you saying, man? What are you saying? You saying I'm here to swindle you?
I mean, you always assume good intentions, right? So
yeah, I like to. Yeah,
it should be like that, but it's not always.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So listen, one of the questions. I mean, let's start with a very simple question.
Oh, sweet. Let's go.
From our listeners. So one is from Nibla. So that's our like regular listener. Yeah. That's a little question with a little wink there. Which is more painful, when you throw a lot of ones, or when your opponent throws a lot of sixes, which hurts more?
I think it's the ones. I think it's the ones. Especially it's hitting on, it's when you're hitting on twos. I don't mind rolling ones when I'm shooting some bang average unit. It's when you've got your big guys going in with his big axe, and you roll like four ones. That's devastating. My favorite story, when I was first learning 40k, I was teaching my mate 40k. He'd never played it before, and he borrowed my Drakari, and he had five incubi and a transport, and his transport dies. So I go, okay, so what happens now is we roll a dice, every one dead incubi, all five ones. And you're just like, I am so sorry, because that has never happened ever in my entire life ever, but I'm afraid they're all dead. And it's so bad.
It's so crushing.
It's so bad. Heart-wrenching. It's so bad.
Sort of experience. So actually, to build up on that, Nibla actually had another question that I will get back to in a moment. But Joker, so my usual co-host, also has a question. And this is on the topic of dice. And he asks, how to keep composed when dice spike in your opponent's favor, be it you failing saves or them passing hideous amounts of feel no pain, for example.
Yeah.
Is it okay to whine or get frustrated at the dice themselves, or is that crossing the line in your opinion?
So this is a really interesting one. So the first thing to say is, are you one of those people who has a full an objective account of all variants across an entire 3-hour game of 40k? Because if you are, then what I like to do, and I don't think that I do, but I don't think I'm a mile off. If I think, I feel like a game has had a particular sway of luck in one direction or another, I will talk about that at the end of the game, after I have said well done to my opponent and after we've agreed on the result. At the end, we can then say, if someone said, oh, actually, the dice were very heavily one way or the dice were another, then we can talk about it. And often what you'll find is they will agree, right? If they've had a really rough time on the dice or you've had a really rough time, you know, you can laugh and joke about it afterwards. I think in-game, complaining about the dice and the luck can be quite a negative and stressful thing for your opponent. I think it can get quite hard, depending how you do it. If you're laughing and joking about it, fine, right? There's ways of recognizing these things without it being like a sort of woe is me situation. In our team, we have a joke that I never complain about dice and I also get ridiculous luck. That's just how it works. Like, that's just, I've always had quite good dice and I don't like to complain about it. You get these incredible moments. I think the time to talk about them is after the game, and you can talk about the ways in which variance affected it. I'm fairly relaxed about dice in as much as it's a dice game and variance is kind of the point of them. And that's what they do. That's their job. They know. And there's a certain risk in falling into that. Well, on average, this does this. On average, this does this. It's like, yeah, but it doesn't just do that, does it? It sends you to the dice, and the dice are going to do something fickle one way or another. And we try and load it X, Y, Z ways, and we try and stack it all in our favor. But they are there to introduce that chaotic element. And so for me, I find it funny. Like I said, we had a game the other day. Void Dragon runs into Magnus, does no damage. Magnus kills him in one go. And you're like, that's just really funny. I'm sorry. It's just a very funny situation. Incredibly unlucky. Very funny situation, and everyone involved just has to laugh at that situation. And then after the game, you go, "That's the moment in the game." Because if Void Dragon goes through Magnus, I lose the game. It's that kind of epic. That's where the dice genuinely just decide a situation.
Yeah, but I must admit to it, like, a couple of things. First of all, I must admit that I was way happier a player, and I enjoyed the game way more when I was this sort of happy-go-lucky player who believed that my army is just great, even if it wasn't. Yeah. But I just love my army.
Yep, absolutely.
And when I went into games believing that I will spike in the positive way,
opponent like that. Those optimistic shooting attacks.
Exactly. I was way happier then than when someone used the word statistically for the first time.
I'm with you. I actually started using
it. Like, the word statistically infuriates me, because many a time I start thinking during the game, like, well, statistically, I should have rolled better. Statistically, you know, I had a plan, I had a tactic, I had the whole battle in my head, but I'm losing because I am not rolling statistically. And it becomes like drills into your brain. And I hate that. I wish I could go back in time and just
remove
that word.
I'm totally with you. And so I try to avoid putting too much stock in that and overthinking that and thinking. I try to avoid that perfect map of what are the exact average outcomes, because I just think it's a bit of a trap, and it's one that can lead to you getting very mentally frustrated, as you say. And so allocate damage based on vibes, guys, is my advice. That's what I like to do. But it's interesting. It's a tricky one, and I do think you can talk about variance with your opponent in ways that are funny and are fine. But that, you know, we've all played that opponent where they're getting very irate and they're getting sulky and they're frustrated, and it just creates a situation where you just feel very down and uncomfortable, because ultimately you've both played a dice game and you've rolled some dice and the dice have produced outcomes, which is kind of what everyone signed up for, you know.
And again, I said I need to admit to a couple of things. So
yeah, hey, we can all do it. I've had moments where dice have betrayed me. I almost won my first GT this year, and then last year, sorry, and then a Caladius grav tank soloed a bunch of acolytes in melee combat, and I was like, and I lost by like 2 points, right? And so I was crushed. I was absolutely crushed in that moment. And that's partly about variance, but it's really, when you boil down to it, it's about a bunch of other things I could have done that would have never meant that moment mattered. And I didn't do those things. And so you're frustrated and you're angry. And so I was like, I need to go outside and just cool off. Got to get myself together and then I'll be fine. And in the end, it's all fine. So I fully get it. In the most extreme moments, it can happen. Often with a bit of distance from the situation, it's easier. But say, if you do find yourself getting what we call it tilted, right, you get a bit wound up, you get a bit upset. I think often the most important thing you can do is just say to your opponent, I'm feeling a little bit stressed and wound up right now. Just going to give myself some time, going to cool off. I'll come back. And then they know it's nothing personal to them and you're managing yourself and it's okay.
Yeah, I that's one of the things that I wanted to admit. I don't know, maybe it's because of like, and I don't know, I'm just guessing that it's because of like low self-esteem. But when when I play the game, I use the game as sort of like demonstrating that I'm not a scrub.
Of course.
Yeah. Like you know, playing with toy soldiers actually does.
Yeah. We invest in this stuff, right?
We invest in this stuff.
We do.
So that's what happens. And then when, for example, the dice don't go my way, I tend to get irritated. And I guess Joker has been on the receiving end of that a couple of times. Yeah. Maybe this is also why he's asking the question. I'll ask him later if our answer actually satisfies him. But I was in a game in TTS where the dice were horrible. Like that's a theme for me, but that's not the case. That in that one game the dice were going horribly.
Yeah.
And I really like complained openly that, you know, that this is especially that like it seemed like the number of ones that I was getting was equaled by his number of sixes. Mm. And at the end of the game, he apologized to me for my role.
Yeah.
It happens. You know, it's a bad thing in itself that I push my opponent into doing that. But again, that's...
No, but you can sympathize, right? People do sympathize. I think if you see someone is just nothing they're trying to do is working out for them, you do feel for them in the game.
Yeah. So at some point when I, you know, said openly that, oh, fuck those dice and so on, he was like, yeah, dude, but you need to realize I'm not doing that, right? It's the game.
No. Exactly.
Again, it was simple, but firm and simple, but very to the point. Like, exactly, it's not your opponent's fault that your dice roll shitty.
Exactly.
I felt horrible at that moment because actually pushed him to saying that.
That's where the amount that we care about the game can at times be a little dangerous because we get so sucked into it. We care about it so much. I remember, as I say, I was talking about, you know, when 10th came out and all these armies were just nuts, I was absolutely livid. I was really angry and frustrated about it. And I was complaining about it a lot. And I was a very negative presence in our sort of team chat and stuff. And then I wanted time out the game and all these other different things. And then it's one of those moments where you step back and look at it and go, yeah, I'm definitely way too close to this at this moment in time, right? I need to be stepped back from this and remember, what am I actually doing? I'm playing lovely games with a bunch of humans and they're very silly games and that's okay. But I think it's very natural to get sucked into it in the moment. And I think all we can do is recognize when we have and then try and make it right afterwards, right? No one's saying never get it wrong, never make mistakes. I think it's being able to own up to it and apologize, whatever else. I think that's the key thing.
Yeah,
and it's tricky with mental health stuff as well. You know, I think it is tricky. It's genuinely tricky if you're in a sort of slightly anxious state or you're feeling a little bit wound up for other things or you're tired. That's when we're vulnerable.
Yep. So I ended my last three games saying, "I'm very sorry. I love you. I love."
Yeah. Exactly that. And that's it. And that lets them know. You know, all the human side of it is still positive, right? That's great.
Exactly. Right. Going on to the next question, or going back to Nibla.
Mm.
Well, he's asking about playing on intent. Do you have any not nice experiences when you don't play on intent?
Like... Oh, so as in playing without it, as in playing?
Yes.
No, honestly. No, not really. I think intent to me is still this thing where if someone says we're going to do it, cool. And if they don't, I'm happy to play by whatever they play. I think some of the toughest experiences I had were when I was a newer player and the things in the game I understood were less. And so there's just so many more moments where you get caught out by things or someone tells you something or, you know, that classic early new player thing where, you know, oh, someone actually got their rule a little bit wrong, but you're new. You don't know their rules. So you don't know. And then about, you know, 2 weeks later, you're like, ah, actually, that's not how that even works. And I've been slightly misled. All of that stuff happens from time to time when you don't know a lot. And I think increasingly, because I play the game an awful lot and have a good knowledge of it, I don't find myself caught out. And actually, to be honest, when I am, I'm delighted because I'm like, oh, damn, that's awesome. That's a cool trick. Nice. Whatever, you know, do some cool play. Mm-hmm. I'm all on board with that. I think you can go fine without intent or with it. Actually, I think the toughest is when you get like a half intent, a little bit of intent, mm-hmm. a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of take backs. And then someone halfway through a game gets the scent of victory, and then that's that stuff all stops.
Intent goes away. And,
because the consistency is when people fail to be consistent. You can be a stone cold killer. If you're consistent, I'm here for it. You can be the loveliest, fluffiest, cuddliest person in the world. If you're consistent, I'm here for it. Don't switch from one into the other halfway through a game, right? Mm-hmm. That's where I think you need to be careful. For sure. Totally.
All right, another question, very interesting one. I have no idea what the situation is like in the UKTC when it comes to this topic, so I'll just shoot.
Okay.
Is it allowed to drink alcohol, and how do you feel about your opponent drinking or, you know, being maybe not perfectly sober?
Yeah, this is a great question. So there absolutely is alcohol at events. It's very common. People do drink at UK events. And fun story, the first time I ever met Typhus, I was playing the Leicester semi-final. He was refereeing. I had never got to a semi-final before, and I was delirious and exhausted and absolutely going to lose, and I had no idea what was going on. And I think I actually took a sip of Typhus's beer, which was outrageous. I had no idea who he was, incredibly rude, and I then saw him after all these months later, and I've learned all about Poland and contact lost, all these different things, and I was just like, oh my God, what have I done? And I saw him at UK, and I was like, I need to buy you a beer. I feel absolutely mortified about taking a sip of your drink during the semi-finals. I don't think I even asked. I was just so fried and stressed.
That's, you know, drinking celebrities' beer is not the crime.
And you're like, fuck, that's like the godfather of Polish 40k, and I'm fucking, oh dear, what have I done?
Easy, now you're a celebrity, so now you
I wasn't then. I wasn't then. I was a scrub back then. Oh man. And so there is alcohol. So I think this is an interesting one. And this is where, again, there's goals and there's capabilities, and it differs person to person. Obviously, never get, I don't like it. You don't want to be so drunk that you can't function in a room and in a social environment. Mm-hmm. That's not good for 40K. That's a bit intimidating, a bit upsetting, a bit distressing, and it's dangerous as well, especially, you know, with cars and other things involved. You've got to be careful with your driving, everything else. A few drinks, I think, can be absolutely fine and can be a lot of fun, and you get plenty of players who do that. I think it does mean there's always risk of sloppiness with rules and other things, which won't necessarily matter if two people are both relaxed about it, but would if they're not. The other thing I think with this is that you need to be, very careful that you're not putting yourself into a position where you're just and a bit antisocial and a bit unfunctional. But I think loads of people can have a couple of beers and play a game. I'll often have like one at the end of a three game day. You know, I think that sort of point I absolutely will. My brain, incidentally, as soon as I have alcohol, whatever it is that does 40K, it's just like, nope. You're on your own. That's it. Like, I just can't shoot things. I can't hurt things. I don't know where what damage is. So I stay away from drink generally when I'm playing. But there's players out there who can absolutely put them away and still really smash people. So I think it's okay. I think just like all things, be careful with it. Be moderate mm-hmm. with it. Don't get yourself in a situation where, you know, you're embarrassing yourself or other people or making people feel intimidated or anything else.
Yeah,
and it's a long day too, and hydration is actually a real killer in 40K events. So if you start early, make sure you're drinking a lot of water as well.
Yeah, alcohol doesn't help that.
It really doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but also one of the arguments that we had a situation in Poland, like, I don't know, half a year ago or something like that, when I think a player got red carded for misconduct or bad conduct at the event. Partially, I can't remember if alcohol exactly was involved, but there was like someone misbehaved. And by the way, to all our listeners, I don't want you to get the impression like 40K is antisocial and like we're dragging out those bad experiences to talk about it because it's an episode focused on manners at the table. Yeah. And
these are the
behaviors.
Extremes, right? These are the
but,
edge cases.
Yeah, but this is not what day to day 40K looks like.
Oh, so no, just, not at all.
Just explaining that really quickly. So there was a guy who behaved badly. I think it was towards Pumbaa and so on, when he even started like threatening with violence to other players, to the ref and to Pumbaa, who was his opponent. And this guy got just red carded and then banned from tournaments, I think, for a year and so on. So he started tilting. I don't know what the reason was, but and this is connected to the next question, or like leading into the next question from Josh. If such a thing happened, to what extent should we as a community allow the players to sort this out themselves? And when do we call the TO? Like,
I think as soon as people are, as soon as you've got shouting, I think as soon as you've got any kind of threats, I think at that stage it's everyone's issue, right? Because I think at that stage it's broke. The social contract between the players has been broken, and there's the a risk of genuine, you know, harm to people, you know, whatever way that goes. And I do think making threats to people is exactly at the point which at which point, you know, for what, you know, whatever the long-term view of sorting someone out and rehabilitating them, whatever else, that's the different conversation. For that event, that's the end of your journey, right? If you're going to be threatening people, you're not part of that community, you're not part of that environment, you can't be there. And it's, I think it is a TO's responsibility at that stage to sort it out. But what they can't do is sort it out if they don't know it's happening. So it's imperative that something like that gets reported quickly, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So also, I would say get people involved. And also I think like all sort of incidents of people being shouted at, if more people step in and step up, stand up for people, it prevents it going any further, right?
Yeah.
I think in that sense, this isn't, you know, I think I don't think anyone in these environments is really going to act on anything like that, but it definitely, it just helps make know the person that's in being shouted at is backed up, and you know, keep an eye on them and everything else.
Yeah. And something that summarizes this, both the, like the, I don't know, threats of violence, but also the misuse of alcohol and like drugs and stuff, if that happens, was an opinion of one of the players who, like there was a big discussion like how to treat that player, because on one hand, nobody wanted to go too harsh, you know, set a precedent and so on, but on the other hand, like the rules weren't clearly stated like how to treat players who behave like that back you know, half a year ago, so it was sort of like working out the rules but also trying to figure out how to treat this particular person.
Yeah,
and one of the arguments that I found really good that came from a player who is also a father who brings his son to events, and they play at those events together. His son is underage, but already like a prodigy, huge prodigy, in the local scene. But his argument was, I bring my child to those events. There are children at the events.
Exactly.
We ramble on about good conduct, we ramble on about sportsmanship, about gentlemen's play, and then my son comes and sees this douchebag behaving like that.
Exactly.
You know, I refuse to come to events if the situation is not regulated.
That's completely right.
And so on and so on. And I think that is like the strongest argument out there. That,
I completely agree.
That there should be rules and like you can drink alcohol everywhere else. You really don't have to bring it to an event. But if you want to know how to behave, know your limits.
Exactly that. I think that's it. And I think it's one of those things where, I mean, certainly for me, I think, you know, I'll have a couple of beers after the games, you know, when we go to the pub or the restaurant or whatever else. But for me, actually, one of the things I love about 40K is it's a hobby I have a great time with completely sober, and it makes me feel good. And I make good friends and have a great time, and I don't need to push it to those other places. You know, when I was 20 something, that was what I was doing to find my good times, and now I think I've replaced it with other kinds of hobbies which are much more constructive and productive. So I think that it's a nice thing to push yourself to just enjoy being in and doing. And I do appreciate, for some people, I imagine there's probably a social anxiety dimension perhaps, where they maybe don't feel that comfortable in the environment and they want to feel a little bit more relaxed. And I do understand that. And I think I can see why that might be tough and might be challenging. But also 40K communities are incredibly welcoming, often quite anxious people who want to help and want to do everything they can to help people and be there for people as well. So, you know, you are in good hands in these environments, in these communities, and you don't need to turn to the wrong things to try and manage it, I think.
Yeah. Another question from Josh, which sort of hits on the same note. Due to the social and club nature of Warhammer, local scenes normally know who the problematic or emotional players are and just live with them. I know we shouldn't gatekeep, but inversely, just because Jim has been in the scene for decades doesn't mean he gets to be a wanker. How does one manage to deal with the local dickhead or sore loser? Should judges preemptively warn them, or should punishments be more readily applied to set up boundaries for the
this is really good. So I think increasingly TOs actually work surprisingly hard at this, right? So I mean, Lewis, who's in our team, Lewis Elms, runs the Saffron Slam events, and he's in a big chat with a whole bunch of TOs from this whole chunk of England, where they are very clued in on any incidents that have happened, any people who've had yellow, red cards, any kinds of issues, and they are all informing each other and keeping each other really up to date so that they can be very careful in terms of admittance of certain people, so that they can keep a very close eye on certain people, et cetera, et cetera. And again, we've only had a couple of problematic individuals in our scene, as it were, over the years, and a couple that were so persistently problematic, you know, that in the end, you know, they just weren't able to keep participating in that scene. And that was really sad in certain ways, and people tried lots of different things. But you do have to protect people, and you do have to take those steps. Now, it depends on where on the scale they fall, right? If it's the, okay, we've got a salty guy, we've got someone who's going to complain, we've got someone who's always going to try and throw in the towel in turn three, you know, you've got these different kinds of people. That's where the teams element, I think, is great, because you can build each other and support each other up and hold each other accountable. One of the things we did when we built 6++ in the first place was we had a very clear standard for the kinds of people we wanted in it, and we have recruited explicitly on that standard, right? We want good people who also play and love the game and understand it well. They can be good players, they don't have to be the best players, but they need to be good people, and they need to be enjoyable people to play. And that's one of our big criteria, and that's something we take massively seriously. And because we've built around that way, we've now got this wonderful situation. We've got a team of like 20, 25 people, and they're all a delight to play, right? I've got a great team of people I really enjoy playing and would happily have out there representing my colours. But we had to build that. We had to be very selective. We had to be very careful with that, right? And I know a lot of UK teams these days do take that very seriously. Again, your Vanguard Tactics, your Ignites, there's teams out there, War Masters, who have a very high standard of conduct, and they admit on that basis. And often, if you don't make that cut, then you won't be there. And so I think the direction of travel is actually a very positive one, because I think that's where, exactly as your questioner says, that's where the team and the social element, which actually to me is the most important element, can take us in the right direction. But it is also on TOs to know who they're dealing with, be aware and be informed. I think Zach does a good job with his circuit. He's got a whole reporting system, so anything about a player does can be anonymously reported to him. So he's very clued in on what happens in games. And local TOs do a great job communicating with one another to make sure they avoid situations where problem players are able to get away with things.
So I need to ask, because you are a lecturer? Or,
yeah, like, yeah, that's right. I'm a historian. Yeah,
exactly. So you are a pedagogue as well. And
So, but
you also like are a competitive player and so on and so on. What do you think works better for the community? Is it setting the boundaries, also like outlining what the penalties for misconduct will be, or on the other hand, going the other way around and creating, you know, best sports, best in faction, best, yeah, I don't know, a Renaissance man or whatever Stephen Box has gone over. Which one works better from like a pedagogue's point of view?
It's the carrot and stick, isn't it? It's the carrot and stick. Well, people are very diverse and respond to different things in different ways. I think you absolutely need both, because I think if it's just a world of don't do this, don't do that, you mustn't be like that, then you don't give people anything to strive towards and you don't have anything to celebrate. And I think our world slips into that all the time, and societies slip into this where they know what they don't like, but they've kind of lost sight of what they do and what they really want and what they're celebrating. I think in 40K, increasingly, we are good at this. And yeah, as you say, yeah, Renaissance man for Stephen Box. I got a best. Zach does best overall now. I won that at Coventry GT. So, you know, he's starting to do that. So there are these little awards for that stuff. And I think it's great to do that. I think it's great to celebrate the hobby side. I think it's great to celebrate sportsmanship. I think it's important to do that. And yeah, as I say, as you say, it doesn't mean anything, though, if you don't have a willingness to stand up for and uphold standards as well. You do need to be able to do that, right? And sometimes we've had to make difficult calls, where we've had to talk to people about different things, or we've had to think very carefully about who we admit to the team and other different things on that basis. And those calls can feel very uncomfortable. But and certainly with me and Chris, our captain, our rule behind the scenes is just what is your gut saying? And if your gut is saying this, we've got to listen to it, because that matters, right? And that's what got us to this point, listening to our guts, listening to our conscience. And that matters with those sorts of things. So yeah, I think you need to be able to stand up for things, but also, yeah, celebrate it. Have, you know, shine a light on what's positive and good in the game. I like the way, you know, you intro you guys now, where you've got your mid-table terror, your 4-1-er, all of these things are amazing. All of those journeys are amazing, and they're all incredibly valuable. And you don't have a tournament if you don't have all those people, because it doesn't work. So you need to be able to see the good and the positives in all of those things, and mm-hmm. remember that we are one big, incredibly weird family.
Yeah. Over twisted sometimes, but still.
incredibly twisted. Yeah.
Yeah, but a good place to be. And again, to anyone, and I think we will finish on this. By the way, it's midnight on my clock. I promised Tom that we would do this within an hour. It's already an hour and 24 minutes on.
Yeah, it was a thing that involved me talking, so you're always going to be up against it.
So we're both kind of talkative, so this is what happens when two talkative people meet. But exactly. Anyway, I think this is the point that we are going to finish with. So I think I agree with this also, that it's great to like, I'm a teacher as well, and so it's, there is an ongoing debate in the teachers community in Poland what is better, how to grade students and how to show them what is good and what isn't. Should you show them what to aspire to, or should you, don't even how sensitive you should be. Don't grade the test if you check the tests and so on. Don't do it with a red pen, because red is already, negative and so on. Yeah. And then don't give bad grades. Just if they deserve a positive grade, give them a positive grade, especially in those early stages at school, for example. Descriptive grades instead of bad notes or something like that, so and give hints how to develop. I think it is also important in our community to set examples, to speak loudly about the good conduct, the sportsmanship, and so on. So for example, what Stephen Box has been doing, I think it's great. This is something that we all can aspire to, and you can feel that. You can feel that this sort of gentleman's play is becoming a standard. Everyone you never hear about those misbehaviors, cheating and so on at the highest levels. All the let's call them celebrities for the sake of the argument, all the celebrities that you hear about, you don't really hear about them having bad time. You don't hear about them doing bad things, or I don't know, doing misplays or not playing by intent. All of them,
the standard is really shifting.
So I guess we will finish with that. So here's hopes and fingers crossed that we all have the same aspiration, aspire to the same sort of standard, and that we turn this game into, first of all, a welcoming place. Second of all, a place where there is a certain etiquette that we all follow, and it's the common same etiquette all around the world, which I think we are seeing now. If you look at the WCW and events like that, there are exemplars of amazing behavior. John Lennon, looking at you. I know you're listening.
I'm amazed I haven't name dropped him yet already, because I just love the man. He's so great.
Yeah. so people like that, Vic Vijay, David Gaylor, they demonstrate what a player should be.
Exactly.
And here's hopes that we will reach a point where everyone plays like that at events, and we don't have to worry about bad manners or tilting or stuff like that.
I think that's the direction of travel, man. I can feel it. And it's a game that brings people together, which is how I've ended up on a random evening night talking to a man from Poland about 40K. Right. That's what this thing can do. It can create these incredible unlikely connections and moments, and that's what the game is for. So get out there and make the most of it, guys. Have a great time.
Absolutely. All right, Tom, you've been an amazing pleasure to talk to. Sorry for keeping you here for so
long. No problem at all, my pleasure.
Just 2 minutes more. Tell our listeners, where can people find you? What should they Google to find you?
Yeah, no problem at all. So we are 6++ Gaming, and if you type 6++ the Invan save into Google, 6++ 40K into YouTube, you will find us. We're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on all the different socials, and we have a whole bunch of shows that go out very regularly on YouTube. We have a lot of regular Facebook content. We have on wherever you find your podcast, we have that 6++ show, which is our main podcast show, which goes out live at 8:30 UK time on a Tuesday. So I'm actually on there tomorrow night. We're back talking New Year's resolutions, so you can find out find out all about my resolutions. Spoilers, my resolutions aren't actually about 40K. I've done enough 40K. I've got other stuff to do this year. Exactly. That's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, I'm happy with this. This is going fine. Let's work on the other stuff. But it's going to be, that'll be a good show. Should be really fun. So if you're really interested in learning more about the game, but having a lot of fun doing it and not taking yourselves too seriously, that's what we're all about. We are flying the flag for the Bang Average competitive 40K player. So we'll see you over there. And obviously keep listening to Contact Lost, because it's actually legitimately my favorite podcast now. I don't know how that's happened. In the space of about 6 months, this has become my favorite podcast. Love you guys. Love what you're doing.
Thank you. That's very nice. And to all our listeners, you know the drill. We have two sponsors right now, Army Painter and Weyland Yutani. You can follow the links in the description to get their amazing products. And please do, especially, you know, in the case of Weyland Yutani, we get a small bit of your purchases as well. So if you want to support the podcast in that way, then that's most welcome. And we also have a Patreon where we will be changing the rules slightly. I already mentioned that, but I haven't got down to that yet. But we do encourage you to support us in any way possible. I know that Joker and my son are planning on doing some event coverage, and we intend to buy some equipment. So we are currently like preparing a list of equipment that we need to buy. So any little brick that helps us build that sort of setup for covering events would be very appreciated. So head on to our Patreon. This is also linked in the description, and do help us out if you want to, and we will repay with more interesting content. Hopefully you like this one. Tom, as I mentioned, you've been a great pleasure, and I'm already looking forward to having you back in the future.
100%. I'll be well up for that.
Really cool. And to everyone, thank you for sticking with us, and until next time.
Be well out there, guys. Bye-bye.